So, Megan, in these episodes that we watched for this episode, what a strange sentence. We got to see Bellamy disguised first as a grounder, in order to sneak into Mount Weather, and then as a Mount Weather guard in order to walk around Mount Weather and not get noticed. So that made me think about sort of the different styles, the different fashions, you could say, of the various cultures that we have in this show. So my question for you is, who is the best dressed character on the show?
All right, so here's my logic on this. It's got to be a grounder, in my opinion, because like they have the most extra over the top clothes, and I love it. And they have like face tattoos and like braids and giant beards. So like they're for sure the most fashionable. And I think I've got to go with Lexa because she's got, that crazy half cape thing. Pretty cool. She's got usually that little sun disc thing on her head because she's the commander. And she's got like the eye paint. And she has like swords and shit and belts for no reason. And she's just always so beautiful and powerful. And I want to look like that every day.
I think that's an excellent point. I definitely think Lexa, like she's got the drama of it, right? Like there's no.
Exactly.
So I think maybe like just as it is now, I think I agree with you that like Lexa is probably the best dressed. I also think that, and this is like maybe wading into spoiler territory, but I also think that Clark is a good candidate because like so far in the show, as a member of the Hundred, a person, a sky person, she just knows how to wear low necklines so well and
Oh
pull
my God, she
off
kills me. She
every
kills me
outfit that she
so
wears.
much.
Looks incredible. And then also later in the series, we will see her get more into the grounder fashion, and she also pulls that off excellently.
That's true. Like, I seem to remember a jacket that was like made of like half made of like pop can tabs, but it still looked very good on
Yes,
her.
yes. Absolutely.
Oh man.
Okay,
All
well,
right.
let's do it. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to A Bit Much. My name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan, and on A Bit Much, we watch a few episodes of the 100, read a few chapters of the book that it is adapted from, and then talk about it for your enjoyment.
And here we are to do just that. We are in the midst of season two of the show. We will talk about the ending of the book. So stay tuned for that. And you are gonna summarize first, yeah?
Yes.
Take it away.
All right. Episode 209. Haunted by visions of Finn, Clark and others accompany his body to the village he massacred so that he may be burned with his victims. Tensions rise as the grounders display their distrust of the Sky People and their disapproval of the new alliance with them against Mount Weather. During a feast, Clark presents Lexa with a bottle of liquor as a peace offering, but when Gustus, Lexa's bodyguard tests it, it appears poisoned. The grounders nearly execute Raven for the attempted assassination of the commander before Clark proves that Gustus was the true poisoner, wishing to end the alliance. Lexa convinces Clark that love is weakness, giving her the push she needs to banish the visions of Finn and send Bellamy and Lincoln to infiltrate Mount Weather. When Monty, Jasper, Miller, and Maya fail in their plan to contact the Ark's radio through Mount Weather's antenna, Monty goes rogue and succeeds, but ends up captured and placed in captivity with Harper. Episode 210. Clark and Lexa battle a mutant gorilla, giving Clark the idea to have Bellamy free the Grounder prisoners in Mount Weather to fight from the inside. The Grounders arrive at Camp Jaha to begin training, and Indra makes Octavia her second after seeing her determination to fight. Jaha enlists Murphy to guide him to the dropship under the pretense of saying goodbye to Wells, but in the morning, a group of Ark residents arrive, and Murphy reluctantly joins them on their journey to find the City of Light. Bellamy and Lincoln arrive in the tunnels of Mount Weather, but when the time comes to enact their plan, Lincoln's addiction overcomes him, leaving Bellamy to be harvested by Mount Weather.
Next is Season 2, Episode 11. Bellamy is taken in by Mount Weather and used as a blood bag for transfusion treatments, but Maya helps him escape and make contact with Clark from inside the mountain. Jasper confronts President Wallace about his missing friends. Wallace discovers what's been going on and tries to stop it and free the 47, but Cage stages a coup, locking up his father and the 47. Camp Jaha captures a Mount Weather scout and tries to interrogate him. They discover the 47 are already being bled, and Clark defies Abby's orders, releasing the prisoner with a threatening message to distract Mount Weather. Season 2, Episode 12. Jaha and company traverse the Dead Zone. They meet a deformed girl named Imori, who bonds with Murphy, then betrays them and takes all of their supplies. Murphy convinces them to keep moving anyway towards the City of Light. The 47 are being harvested and killed for their bone marrow, but Bellamy buys them time by causing a containment breach that kills Singh, using the help of former President Wallace. Bellamy and Clark discover a plan to bomb the 12 clan leaders. Clark and Lexa save themselves, but let the others die for strategic reasons. And Octavia finds Lincoln and urges him to fight his addiction to the red, the drug that Mount Weather uses.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
I didn't get anything wrong in there. I didn't mix anything up. Good. No. Let's talk about episode 9 then.
Let's do it.
So this one's mostly about the aftermath of Finn's death.
Fun stuff.
And I liked the spooky trauma ghost of Finn.
Oh, funny. I don't know.
I feel like it had the potential to be really bad, and they pulled it off pretty well. Except for, I think, the very end when she literally says out loud to him, "Love is a weakness," and then he walks away. I'm like, well, that was too on the nose. You could have done that much more subtly.
That's very true. I don't know. I just thought it was, like, unnecessary, but also, like, I get why they did it, because it's like she can't just move on immediately. Like, we do that a lot here in this show, where, like, something terrible happens, and then we're immediately just like, gotta keep moving on or whatever. So I'm glad that they didn't do that. But I thought it could have been a little bit more subtle than, like, she seeing visions of him. I just don't enjoy that trope very much, personally.
No, that's fair. I do, like, I think, I agree that, yeah, I like that they did take the time to show, like, she is legitimately traumatized by this.
Yeah.
She is, like, grieving and feels guilty over it. Like, I mean, the episode opens with her, like, frantically scrubbing Finn's blood off of her hands, like, immediately after she's stabbed him.
Oh my god, which is, I just now realized, a callback to
him.
When Finn,
when he made his first murder, the only, like, morally justified murder. Yes. And, So, yeah, no, that was a good callback. And I guess what I appreciated, or what was good, what was well done about the whole, like, her seeing visions of Finn was, like, when, I think even before the opening credits, when she goes out to see his body and the Grounders are, like, picking it up to transport it to Tondi C. And, you know, so she's just watching this happen, and then his eyes flash open and stare at her.
Ooh.
And then it, like, cuts to credits, right? And so what I appreciated about that moment was that, like, the show trusted the audience not to be like, what? He's still alive? But to appreciate that it was, right, that it was her own, like, grief hallucination. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was a level of trust that I appreciated from the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, like, later the show kind of violates that by, like, having her literally talk to the ghost, like, while other people are around. So then she just does seem, like, crazy. And then, like, at the end when she's like, love is weakness, go away. So it's like if they had kind of kept that same level of, like, you know, subtlety or, like, trust in the audience that they had from the start, I think it would have been really well done.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. So it was interesting to me when Clark is like, okay, we have to take his body to this village or whatever, like, Raven, you know, stay here and man the radio or whatever. She was like, fuck that, I'm coming with you. And she was like, you better bring your goddamn radio. Like, I feel like this more than anything, like, Clark's had to make tough decisions in the past, and she's, like, still gonna have to make very, like, a lot of tough decisions ahead of her. But I feel like the decision to kill Finn was, like, kind of where Clark, as we know her, was, like, born, where it's, like, okay, now she, like, isn't, like, you know, 100% pragmatic, but that it's, like, she's finally understood that, like, this is what it's going to take to keep everyone she cares about alive. Like, I just think it kind of, like, I think you can trace everything that she does after this back to that moment.
I definitely think this is a turning point, because, like, we've had previous situations where, like, because you could say, like, when she, you know, when she says, yeah, okay, go ahead and, you know, blow up the dropship at the end of the last season, knowing that Finn and Bellamy are still outside, like, okay, yeah, that's this moment where she kind of has to be willing to sacrifice, potentially sacrifice people she cares about for the, you know, betterment of her whole people, whatever. But there was something that was more, like, deliberate about this decision, right? Of, like, it wasn't just this, like, desperate. I mean, it was desperate, but it was more calculated, I think. Mm-hmm. And that is, yeah, I definitely agree, is this turning point in terms of her leadership and the decisions that she continues to make later.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have, I mean, kind of the other big related theme or character, you know, development or whatever for Clark is, like, the plan for Bellamy to infiltrate Mount Weather. Because at the beginning of the episode, he's like, let me go to Mount Weather and let me sneak in and I will, like, you know, fuck with them from the inside so that you guys can attack. And she's like, no way, I can't lose you too. Like, after just losing Finn, she's like, I can't lose you. And then by the end of the episode, Lexa has convinced her that love is weakness. So then she's like, actually, it's okay, Bellamy, go.
Yeah, that's rough. So Lincoln and Octavia are back together again, which makes me happy. But, like, there's this scene where they're, like, all on a, like, around the fire. It's, like, after Clark, like, lays down in between everyone. There's, like, there are no sides anymore or whatever. And they're, like, Octavia and Lincoln are talking or whatever. Then they start kissing. And then, like, Octavia full-on just, like, lays on top of him and straddles him, like, in the middle of everyone.
Yeah.
And I'm just, like, everyone's cool with this. Like, nobody's uncomfortable right now.
Yeah.
It was very funny.
You guys go a little further out into the woods to do this. Yeah. No, it made me think of, like, the... like the Dothraki in Game of Thrones, how they're like, their whole culture is like, there's no privacy. Like, it's cool.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, so then we have this funeral pyre, in Tondisi in Lincoln's village where the massacre took place, which I thought was kind of an interesting idea, this like ritual of burning the murderer with his victims, but kind of like not nice almost, that then they're like, this is like forgiveness, like this is how we move forward somehow,
right? But like on a visceral level, like I do not get that. Like if somebody murdered somebody that I love, I would not want their like ashes to be
exactly mingled. yeah no, I was like confused by it. Like I was like, okay, I guess that's kind of nice, but also like, but people are really like, they actually are into that. Okay,
right? Like I don't I feel like it doesn't go along with, like, kind of the grounder mentality that's been set up so far. With the whole, like, blood must have blood. Like, they're just, like, ruthless. Like, why wouldn't they just chuck him into a pit? Like, that seems much more grounder to me.
I guess, but I also feel like, yes, they're very ruthless, but then, once the battle is over, or like once death has happened, it's like they seem very much about like moving on or something like that. I don't know. I don't know. It is kind of hard to, there's a word that I can't think of to make sense of, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I can see the argument where it's like they treat death a lot differently because it's like just so much more commonplace for them,
right?
Where it just kind of happens, like they have that saying and they like cut a braid and then they're like, okay, you know. I just think of the John Mulaney bit. It's like, bury the boy and yeah. So I think, yeah, they're just, and like I know that, I mean, you know, I think the next episode we learn like that the commander is reincarnated. I don't know if that's a thing that only the commander does or if that's everyone, but I could see if they think everyone is reincarnated, then like that kind of harmony has to be kind of reached before, you know, the murderer and the victims come back around.
that's a really good point. I don't know. I don't think they've ever mentioned that. And like, I don't think I've ever heard, in my memory at least, the grounders talk about like any kind of like afterlife or anything.
True.
And I mean, we know, like you and I know from having watched more of the show, that like this reincarnation that Lexa talks about is like, is this kind of unique thing for the commanders, because there's this whole like genetic mutation and like weird little brain chip thing that we will get into later. So like that doesn't happen for everyone, but that's a really good point, that if they believe in reincarnation, like, more generally, that, yeah, that this kind of, like, you know, settling of old, you know, making peace with, like, old things before, you know, moving on to your next life, that would make more sense.
It's headcanon now. I'm gonna choose to believe it.
Yeah, that sounds good. So in Mount Weather, Harper's been missing, and they're getting worried. So they decide to, instead of their previous plan, which was just wait for Clark to do something, they decide to take some action. And they set up this, Maya helps them set up this radio signal to broadcast to, hopefully to Clark and the rest of the ARC people. And as part of this, they also discover this, like, signal jamming thing that like that Mount Weather is like sending out. And again, we have this reiterated where Monty is like, wait, I heard this on the like black box of the Exodus ship. Like, they shot down they caused the Exodus ship to crash. And I'm still like, why? Like, we still have no explanation for why that they would have done that or why that's important.
Yeah. And like, to my knowledge, that like never comes up again. Like, it's another reason to hate Mount Weather, but, like, they had no motivation to do that whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm just still very confused by that.
Whatever. It's fine. Going back to, so the poisoning, or whatever.
Yeah.
That was interesting. Gustus, or whatever. I don't know if we've, like, okay, am I crazy, or does, like, every bodyguard look like that man? Like, I don't know if it's just because they take a giant man and give him long hair and a beard and also face tattoos, they all look the same, or if it's the same actor, because I swear to God, I'm like, wait, wasn't that Nyko? Oh wait, but wasn't that also Justice? Wait, who is this?
they do have similar, yes, I agree that there is a similar look. I think we see Nyko in this episode too. He's there in the village. But I think that Gustus is the guy who, when we first met Lexa, they were, like, kind of trying to pretend that Gustus was the commander.
That makes sense. So, I mean, it goes along with the whole, like, Lexa's very progressive as a leader, as a commander, and she, you know, has brought all of the different tribes together and under like an alliance, and now she's brought like the sky people into it, but people are not happy about it because basically all the sky people have done since they landed was like fuck their shit up. So they're not, like, most people are not happy about it, but Lex is like literally like, if you say anything bad about this alliance, I'm gonna kill you. And they're like, fine, whatever. And so Gustus's plan is to poison himself to make it look like the sky people were trying to poison Lexa so that the alliance will be broken and that she'll be safe. Like, his biggest thing is like keeping her alive because he's her like sworn bodyguard or whatever. That obviously backfires because Bellamy figures it out and like calls him out on his shit, and then he has to die by like that crazy thousand cut thing, and then Lexa has to kill him. It's very sad.
Yep.
One thing that killed me though, when I can't remember who asked Bellamy, I think it was maybe Octavia or somebody, asked Bellamy, like, how did you know that Gustus was the one who did it or whatever? And he was like, he'd do anything to protect her. It just makes sense. And I, like, I think they cut to Clark. Like, he was looking at Clark. And I was like, and my first thought is, like, the fact that they're not in love is a crime. I'm so angry. Like, it's so good. Like, because he would also do anything to protect Clark. Why isn't it a thing?
I know. It is. I mean, like, we can maybe talk about this more when we get to the book section, but it's like, in the books, they kind of make Clark and Bellamy a thing, like, really early on, which makes it have, like, no substance and, like, basically no, it's not interesting because, like, they haven't developed trust or relationship. Whereas in the show, we have this, like, incredible slow burn where they just build up their trust for each other and their love for each other as leaders and as friends, and it's so good. And it's but then we need the payoff for that. We need them to actually get together.
I'm gonna start a petition if it doesn't happen in this last season. Like,
okay, here's what I'm gonna say, Megan. 100% there are already petitions for this to happen. You don't have to start a new one.
That's fair. I'm going to sign all of the petitions.
Okay, so yeah, at the end of this episode, Monty gets caught and is put in a cage, and Harper's also in a cage, and she's looking real bad. And and then that's kind of where it ends.
She was things like, are looking there's 47 of them.
There's 47 like, cages. Yeah. So yeah, anything else about this ep?
I'll double check my notes. No, I don't think so.
Okay, let us move on to episode 10, which is the episode where we get to see Bellamy wearing grounder clothing, and he looks so fucking good.
Oh, I mean, Bellamy looks so fucking good, like, all the time.
He looks so good all the time, like,
it's
but,
so
like,
unfair for one man to be so attractive. But yes, no, I agree. Like, I want, like, a alternate universe where he grows up as a grounder, honestly. I'd read the hell out of that. No, yeah, he looks incredible. And poor Lincoln has to, like, pretend to be a Reaper. It's, like, very much too soon.
Yes.
He's definitely not over this trauma, which is obvious because, you know, I don't remember what their, like, what was their initial plan? They were, like, going to go into the tunnels and cause some sort of diversion? They were, like,
so, I think their initial plan was, like, basically for just the two of them to, like, approach Mount Weather. So it would just be, like, Lincoln and Bellamy, and Lincoln would be, like, I'm a Reaper, I brought you this grounder or whatever. And then to, like, maybe, well, no, because they're already all in suits, so it couldn't have been, like, that they were going to open the containment doors, but basically it's, like, they're vulnerable because, like, all Bellamy and Lincoln have to do is, like, slash open their little, like, space suits, and they, like, start dying from radiation poisoning.
True.
So I think the plan was basically for the two of them to just take on whatever, you know, Mount Weather guards came out, and then for Bellamy to head in, like, undetected.
Like what he did later, like, use their clothes and try to blend in.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Cool. But then it got thrown off because a bunch of other Reapers showed up, so they had to be part of that. And then when the moment comes, Lincoln cannot resist. Because it's like the whole time they're dealing with changes in the plans, and Lincoln literally starts to say, like, I can't do this. Like, I'm not, this is not going to work. I cannot go through with this. And Bellamy is like, no, you got this. Like, you'll just grab the drug and then run, and the Reapers will follow you, and then I'll slip in, whatever. But it doesn't happen like that, because Lincoln, as he said, could not handle it, takes the drug, and just kind of completely fucks over the plan.
Very true. And it's very sad. And you're like, no.
It really is.
And then also, like, I want to know what their criteria is for, like, harvesting people versus Cerberus or whatever. Like, I thought, I was not for sure Bellamy would be hell. Like, yeah, he would be like prime Cerberus like material, yeah. But apparently he's, I mean, I know Lincoln is like larger than him, but like he seems like a pretty fit dude. Like, I don't know, maybe they had enough Reapers already.
I totally agree. I could maybe see an explanation that now that they are like trying to get the bone marrow from the 47 and like make everyone able to go on the ground, maybe they're just like, we don't really need more Reapers because soon we won't even need the blood from the grounders, maybe. But I also agree that I was like, why would, like, Bellamy is like a strong, young, like, you know, guy. Why would he not be turned into a Reaper? I don't know.
Because plot.
Yeah, because it would have further fucked up the plan.
True. I think that was about it for Lincoln and Bellamy.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Jaha, because he's so fucking stupid. I hate Jaha so much.
Yes.
So there's like a conversation he has with Kane about like faith. Oh, wait, no. It's not Kane. It's fucking Murphy. About faith versus stupidity or whatever. Oh, I can't remember. I put a note, but now I can't remember the conversation. But he was like, there's a difference between, like, having faith and just being stupid enough to go along with something. And I was like, because, like, the City of Light is so logical, like, he was...
That's, like...
So yes. Stupid.
Okay. Because, so, like, this episode is where Jaha really, like, you know, turns up the, like, City of Light evangelism and is like, we gotta go.
Yeah.
And I understand why, one, Jaha doesn't think the Alliance will work, because like it doesn't. Like, it's always like just on the edge of completely breaking down. So I get that he's like, this isn't gonna work, and even if it does work and we defeat Mount Weather, then what? Like, you think we're gonna live in peace, whatever. That kind of makes sense to me. And the fact that he then sees the City of Light as a viable alternate, like, that kind of makes sense to me, that he's like, we should explore this other option. But I don't understand why he's so like weirdly aggressively passionate about it, like why he literally is, it's like, it seems like this religious thing, right? Of like, and when they're having a conversation about it, Murphy points out, he's like, you literally don't know that this city exists, why are you, you know, like believing basically this narrative of like everyone is accepted there, you know, the roads are paved with gold, like you can think this is an option, but why are you so passionate about this thing that you know basically nothing about, have no proof actually exists? And I don't understand that, other than it's just like Jaha has been through a lot and he's just kind of losing it.
No, I think that might be it. Like, that's what I'm choosing to believe, because it's like there's no logic to it. Like, and also the City of Light is a grounder legend, so like why wouldn't you think only grounders would be welcome? Like, there's just no reason to think that they would be any safer there than they are where they currently are. So,
yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I think he's just cracking up. he literally was hallucinating on the arc, which, I mean, you could be like oxygen deficiency or whatever, but also, like, he's just, yeah, like you said, he's been through a lot. I think he's just slowly losing his mind.
Yeah, which also this episode, like, which... This was after he had already, like, decided to recruit people to go to the City of Light, but he, so we asked Murphy to take him to Wells's grave, and they go, and then Jaha basically finds out that Wells died because, you know, the little girl who killed him wanted to kill Jaha and just killed Wells in his place. So, like, just another, basically just another thing to drive him over the edge.
Yep. But it's, like, true. That's a dick, Wells.
Yeah.
The biggest dick. Also, I think it's crazy that anyone would go with him. But there's at least 12 people who think that he's right. Who would just show up. And they're like, okay, take us to the city of light, man. Wild.
Yeah, I mean, again, I can see if they're like, hey, this thing clearly isn't working out, let's try something else, but no one seems to acknowledge until, like, once they get, like, in the next episode when, like, Imori tricks them and they no longer have any supplies, and at that point they're like, okay, well, this is absurd, we should turn back. But, like, until that moment, they're all just like, let's go to this place that we don't really know exists and don't really know which direction it is in, and we're just gonna have faith, I guess, in this random idea.
Oh, man. But I like how Murphy just goes with them because he's like, whatever, fuck it. Like, I'm not having like, any got fun.
Better than you.
Everyone thinks I'm a criminal. Like, might as well go. Like,
yeah.
Oh, like, I love Murphy so much. Oh. And, like, I don't think the Alliance is going that badly. Like, when they leave, like, you know, Indra is there with her, like, troops or whatever, and they're training, and which is weird, because, like, why would they go there to train if they weren't going to, like, train with the Ark people?
Well, so I feel like Lexa sent them there to train together, but then once they got there, Indra was just like, no. Like, I am just going to be kind of defiant because I still really don't like this alliance. But by the end of this episode, like, because basically through the whole episode, while they're there training, Indra's very resistant. She clearly doesn't trust them or believe in the alliance. She doesn't want basically her people and the Ark people intermingling. But then at the end of the episode, the grounders go hunting and bring back like some kind of animal to eat. And Indra like offers food to Kane and then like invites them to start eating. So that's like kind of the first time that Indra has kind of shown any belief or faith in this alliance, like kind of the first moment of goodwill from her.
True. Which I think is thanks to Octavia, because before the hunt, she like challenges. She was like, I want to train with you, whatever. She's like, get out of our way, we're hungry. And she's like, no, I want to train. So she fights this big scary man, and like he just keeps fucking her up. But she keeps standing up, and like you can see like Indra like finally gave like a scrap of respect for Octavia. Yes. She's like, you know, she sucks at this, but at least she's not giving up. And so she was like, yeah. Hey, do you want to be my second? Like, half out of pity and half out of like,
yeah,
I see your potential. Like, you're angry as hell. I want to channel that into something productive.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's like we've already kind of, it was already kind of established that, you know, Octavia is this bridge between the Sky People and the Grounders because of like her relationship with Lincoln, and due to that relationship, her like more, her deeper knowledge of the culture and stuff. Like she explains that there's this like legend about guns, like that if a grounder uses a gun that they will like curse their whole village or whatever, which is like clearly something that's been implanted by the Mountain Men to prevent them from stealing weapons. But like, yeah, so Octavia has this like cultural knowledge already, and then yeah, by agreeing to be Indra's second, she's going to become kind of even more integrated into the grounder culture, to the point where in the future she identifies more with them than with the Sky People.
Yeah, which is so choice. I love Octavia's whole deal.
Yeah.
I forgot about the mutant gorilla, though. I like started laughing.
I know.
Like, I can't believe we're wasting our time with this right now. Like, I get that it, like, whatever, it gives Clark the idea to, like, you know, free all the grounders and have them fight from the inside. Like, okay. But, like, it just seems like such filler. Like, to fight a gorilla.
I mean, basically, it gives sort of, like, the takeaway from that whole little side plot this episode was, yes, that Clark got the idea of, like, well, let's release the grounders already in Mount Weather. But also that, like, Clark and Lexa kind of got to talk more, and Lexa sort of gained a little more respect for Clark, like through her decision making and her like her cleverness to like escape the gorilla and her like tactical thought, right? Of like, at one point Lexa twists her ankle and she's like, just leave me behind. And Clark's like, no, and takes her. So then, like, when they get sort of to safety, Lexa's like, you know, you're just showing weakness. Like, you have to make hard decisions. You should have left me behind. And then Clark's like, okay, no matter how I feel about you, that was a tactical decision. Because if you die, the Alliance is fucked. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm thinking like a leader here.
Yeah, give me some and also, credit. Like, so, yeah. What more do you want from me? I literally killed my boyfriend in front of you. Like, yeah. I can make hard decisions.
Exactly. Like, it's, like, it is laughable to hear someone tell Clark, like, you gotta make hard decisions.
No, yeah, but I agree it was good. Clark and Lexa bonding time.
Yeah.
Is that it? This episode?
I think that's about it, yep.
All right, that's good. Let's keep rolling. All right, so this was, like, a lot more Mount Weather-based. It's like we're making up for last time. But, so, my biggest thing about this episode was, like, I am confused by the president and his morals. Because, like, it was totally cool with him to, like, use up grounders for their blood supply or whatever. And then, like, literally, like, just throw away their bodies when they didn't have enough blood anymore. But, like, as soon as it's the 47, like, now it's bad. Like, I don't get how it's different except for xenophobia.
Yeah. I mean, like, you're right. I think in this episode, maybe in the next episode, but anyway, there's a point where President Wallace says to his son, like, you know, you're a stain on our legacy. And Cage goes, our legacy is like capturing people and bleeding them dry and then throwing them out. Like, we have never been perfect. So it's like his argument is almost more logical of like, look, we've already been morally like absolutely bad, like for a long time. So like, I don't feel bad about like, you know, crossing other boundaries in order to, you know, get what we need to. I mean, I guess you could say that like they don't need the 47 like to survive, right? Like what they're doing with the 47 is just so they can go on the ground. But yeah, no, you're totally right. And I also thought it was weird that like when Dr. Singh first goes in to like just start picking them off at random and like, you know, taking them in and killing them and taking all their bone marrow out, like, she has this line where she's like, I hope you all know that you're, like, very important to us, very special to us. And I'm like, why the pretense? Like, there is no, like, why not just be like, yeah, we're using you people as, you know, like, not as human beings, but just as, you know, like, medical devices. Like, why even have this line about, like, we really appreciate the sacrifice that you are unwillingly giving for us?
I mean, I think it's just to show how freaking twisted she is.
Yeah.
Oh. Is this the same episode where they, like, get out or if there's a containment breach? Or is that the next episode?
No, that's the next episode.
Okay. Then I'll save my comments.
yeah, no, in this one, so Bellamy is just, like, treated as a grounder, so he's just, like, put in a cage, and we meet, for the first time, Echo. I don't know if we got her name, actually.
We didn't.
But
she's just random grounder girl right now. But
so, yeah, random grounder who's in the cage next to Bellamy and who helps Bellamy kill this guard. So, yeah, so with Maya and Echo's help, Bellamy is able to get into Mount Weather, and then there is this, like, terribly tense elevator scene where they're like in the Maya and Bellamy are trying to sneak in and they're in the elevator and other people get in the elevator and it's just a recipe for anxiety, but they do manage to get in and then Bellamy meets first of all, discovers that there are children, like, going to school inside Mount Weather. And he's, like, shocked. He's like, there's children here? And Maya is like, what did you expect? Yeah. Like, we've been living here for 100 years and we're still here. So clearly we're procreating. Like, yeah. Obviously there's children here. And, like, just to further, like, twist the knife, he meets the child of the man that he just murdered.
Which is, like, peak the 100, right? It's yeah, like just yes. the worst possible thing. And so, yeah, but it is interesting because then, like, you can see, like, his tune totally changed, right? Because, like, the beginning of that episode is, like, he gets shut in with Echo or whatever, and he is like, we're gonna get out here and we're gonna kill every single person in this mountain. And then, like, when yeah. he finally makes contact with Clark and Raven, he's like, guys, there are kids here, like, we need a new plan, basically. Like, please tell me that we can have a new plan. So.
Which also, I just imagine in that moment, like, Maya is standing right there with him, and he says on the radio, like, there are children here. We need a plan that doesn't kill everyone. And Maya's like, so just knowing me, you weren't like, we need a plan that doesn't kill everyone.
Oh, because she's complicit, to an extent.
But she still, I don't know, but she still has that, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, but so Bellamy is a gem and we love him, and mm-hmm. Yeah, and everything in that he does is so tense and scary in Mount Weather, because you're like, oh god, it's gonna get caught.
Yeah. What was I gonna say? Oh yes. Yeah, so then what's going on outside of Mount Weather is that there's this, like, attempted assassination of Clark and Lexa by some Mount Weather scouts, and they, like, take one of them as hostage and try to interrogate him, which doesn't go well. But like, when they bring him back to Camp Jaha, Indra is so pissed, and she just, like, you know, she calls them, like, weak for letting this man live. And it's like, I get that the Grounders are getting much more cavalier about death, right? And especially death in wartime. But it's like, this is so clearly a tactical decision. Like, this isn't because this isn't, like, merciful. This isn't like, oh, we don't want to kill this guy. No, it's literally just they want to be able to get information out of him. So it's like, again, I just don't understand that, like, position of Indra's of, like, you guys are weak for letting this man live.
I mean, I get it a little bit more when she's like, okay, if you're going to let him live, like, let me torture him. And they're like,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
And she's like, fuck's sake.
Yeah.
And they're like,
fair.
No, just tell us what he wants or what we want because we let him live. And she's like, you guys are fucking ridiculous. She's like, walks yeah. away. Like, yeah. Which I agree. Like, because it didn't work. Like,
it didn't work. I mean, which then ultimately he is, you know, sort of used well as a tool, right? Clark uses him to send back a message, this, like, threatening message about how they have all of these upper hands to Mount Weather, so that Mount Weather will be more concerned with them and not looking for Bellamy, which I guess kind of works.
Oh man.
But then we also have some cool, I mean, so there's two, sort of two coups in this episode, right? Mm-hmm. The obvious one is that Cage takes over Mount Weather. He, like, it's like he's the head of security, and I can't believe that President Wallace did not think about that before trying to arrest him. Like, didn't even consider the fact that maybe he had some pull with, like, all of the security officers. Mm-hmm. But that happens. And then there's also this tension between Abby and Clark, to the point where Clark is like, oh, we're going to release the prisoner so I can send him with this threatening message. And so she, like, has Grounder guards around her to, like, get him out and take him. And there's this standoff. And, Clark has this line where she says to her mom, you may be the chancellor, but I'm in charge.
Which is just so badass. I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, because, like, really, it was a long time in coming, right? This kind of
yeah.
pushback. Because, like, yeah, y'all just landed here, but, like, we've been here. Like, we've been doing this shit. So, like, just let us do what we need to do. And, like, finally, Abby's like, fine. She's not happy about it.
She's not, like, happy about it.
And Kane is like, yeah, totally. Give all of the
yeah.
power to the teenagers. I love Kane.
Yeah, Kane is... It's just wild how your attitude towards Kane changes so drastically. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's like when he was a leader on the Ark,
he was
just so much more like severe, mm-hmm. you know? And then, like, as soon, it's like he's so excited about like diplomacy and like making everybody get along. Like,
oh, yeah, it's adorable. It's like this show is just very good at character arcs like that. Like, Bellamy, also amazing. Freaking Octavia's change from like bright eyed, bushy tailed, chasing butterflies and skinny dipping to like hardcore grounder warrior. Like, everyone's character arcs are just so good. Usually, you know, there are times.
Usually, where, yeah. I mean, there's clearly exceptions, like we talked about Finn. Mm-hmm. But generally, yeah, even when they have these characters make these pretty significant changes, it's like, I still believe it, mm-hmm. you know, like, I'm still, like, on board, and there seems, like, a really strong narrative through line between how they started out and how they got to where they are now.
That it for this episode?
Yeah, that's it. So, in episode 12, we check back in with Jaha, who... they're just kind of wandering through the desert.
Which, like, I had a cool thought, though. Where is this dead zone? Because, like, did it used to be the ocean? Like, is that where we are? I don't know.
Well, okay, so, because I remember when Jaha first landed in this desert, I was like, where is this geographically? Yeah. There's no deserts near Washington, D.C. So the answer is, I don't know. I don't think it's as... Well, actually, because I think they say... I vaguely remember them saying something like they've been traveling for 2 days or something. And I feel like it's more than a 2-day trip to get to the Atlantic Ocean.
That's true. And I think they have mentioned the ocean before. Like, I think Lincoln was like, I have a friend.
Well, yeah, like that's where Luna is, which
we'll
eventually check in with.
Now, but. Okay, so it's not the ocean. But I was just like, what if like the bomb just like evaporated the ocean
just
and now they're walking
on
the ocean sand? But no, yeah, it must just be like a nuclear waste then, because there are no deserts around Washington, D.C.
So they meet Imori, who pulls an excellent trick on them where she pretends to be a helpless little girl, and then she bonds with Murphy, and she's like, oh yeah, I'm an outcast, and he's like, great, me too. And she's like, why are you an outcast? And he's like, well, I murdered 2 people and I tried to murder some more people. And he says something like, and I had my reasons, but nobody cared.
I'm just misunderstood.
Those people deserve to die. And then she's
so
like,
into it.
Yes, she's like, and then she's like, well, here's my crime. And she just has a mutation on her hand. Like, she just has a weird looking hand. And I'm like, those things can't be equated.
The only thing I could think is that, like, she's obviously like a con artist or whatever. So maybe she's done terrible things like that too. So she's like, I get it, man. When you're pushed, I got my reasons too.
I mean, that's fair that then by the end of the episode, she like betrays them, takes all their stuff, threatens them. So like, who knows what other crimes she has committed in the past.
They're just instant crime buddies.
Yeah. But then sort of significantly at the end of the episode, even when she is like holding a knife to his throat and like taking all his stuff, she like whispers to him, like due north. So then, you know, it sort of changes where Jaha is willing to go back and Murphy is like, nah, we gotta have faith. Like, we gotta follow, we gotta keep going north. And so they do, even though it seems pretty foolhardy.
Oh man. Yes, that's about it for Jaha's clan.
So in Mount Weather, I think this is the episode where, like, at the end of the episode, they were all locked up. And then this is the episode where Dr. Singh starts just picking people off to take their bone marrow. Which is like, you know, luckily, she started taking random people whose names we don't know and we don't care about. It doesn't matter that they died. But,
No, yeah, for sure. The red shirts of this.
Exactly, the red shirts. The random members of the 100. And then Bellamy sneaks in, like, during one of those, you know, kidnappings to give Jasper a gun and be like, fight back next time.
Right, which, like, Jasper must be so surprised to see Bellamy, because, like, I'm pretty sure they thought he was dead. Like, because he was outside the dropship when it went off, and that was, like, the last time they saw or heard of Bellamy.
Holy shit, you're right. That is so weird to think of the disconnect of, it's like, we've been seeing what's going on outside, but yeah, like, as far as the 47 know, it's like, they won the battle with the Grounders, and then were put in Mount Weather, and that's all that they have known. That's all the information they have, which is whack. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Jasper literally has to tell everyone during this episode, like, the Ark is on the ground. And they're like, what? Like, oh, shit, they're so far behind.
Yeah, they missed out on a lot. Yeah. And so there's more kind of in this episode of that, like, putting on a pedestal, right? Of like, Jasper sees Bellamy outside and knows that he's there, and then he tells everyone else, he's like, I saw Bellamy out there. And they're like, no, you didn't. Like, Bellamy is definitely dead. What are you talking about? And he's like, no, guys, like, it's Bellamy. He's going to figure something out. Like, he's going to save us.
Right, but, like, I love, you know, in the moments before that happens, that, like, they went from, like, totally doing nothing, like, Clark's going to figure it out, she's going to come save us, to, like, Monty and Jasper, like, becoming leaders, like, in their own right, like, of the 47, how they, like, right, are just getting shit done. Like, that was choice. Like, I loved that kind of transition. I think they, like, you know, they keep that throughout the rest of the series, where they, like, had this time where they were, like, on their own, and they had to step up, and that really, like, helped them grow, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So that, but then, basically, that's kind of, like, their whole thing until, well, so then Bellamy goes to former President Wallace to be like, hey, help me out. Which he does. He gives him some information that allows Bellamy to cause this containment breach, which is when, you know, finally, so they like fight back, and then Dr. Singh is like, take, you know, Jasper, the leader. And so then when there's, you know, a character with a name who we care about who might, might be in trouble, that is when Bellamy manages to cause a containment breach. Flood that level with radiation, kill all the guards, and kill Dr. Singh in this just beautifully grotesque and cold-blooded way.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. I love that scene. She, like, crawls to the elevator, and she, like, gets in there. She breathes a sigh of relief, like, oh, I made it. And then Jasper, like, stops the elevator doors from closing, and it's like him and Miller and Jasper and Monty are like staring at her while she dies, and Jasper's like, we want you to know how special you are to us. And she withers up and dies, and it's fantastic.
It was very good. It was, she, you know, she was a great character to hate. She was just so unabashedly evil, so it was great to watch her die like that. So then I think we just got to talk about the missile.
The missile. I don't like it. I mean, I like it because it's also another moral quandary, but it's just, like, so sad and terrible.
Right. So Clark and Raven discover through Bellamy's intel that there's this meeting of all the 12 clan leaders and, like, you know, the Sky People leaders, and Cage is going to use a missile to just fucking destroy them all. And so then Clark goes to warn Lexa. And, like, I noticed this too when, like, Clark gets to Tondi C and is just, like, goes, finds Lexa, is like, can we talk in private? Again, like, she doesn't show up and just start being like, get the fuck out of here, there's a missile coming, you know? So she finds Lexa, and then they go down and she warns her, and Lexa's like, if we evacuate now, Mount Weather will know that we've got, you know, someone inside. Well, they'll know that we have inside information. So she's like, we just got it. The two of us got to run away and let everyone else here die.
Oh, which is so hardcore, right? Like, because Lexa, you know, it seems, you know, from the outside, like, it's easier for her to make these terrible, horrible decisions because she's decided to not love anyone ever again. So she's like, whatever, screw everyone, let's get out of here. And you know, she obviously, like, points out to Clark, like, you came to me, you didn't tell everyone.
Exactly.
Like, you also know this is, like, what we have to do. And so they, like, leave, and then Clark sees Abby, and she's like, oh, shit. She was, like, she changed her tune. She was like, well, let's find, like, the guy who's, you know, somebody has to triangulate the whatever, whatever. And it's, like, a classic 100 moment where you're like, oh, maybe they'll, like, figure it out, and they're both being this one. It'll be great. But it does not work out like that. She just grabs Abby, and Abby's like, what the hell is going on? And the missile goes off. And then, like, they wake up, and Abby's like, holy shit, like, you knew this was gonna happen. And she, like, gives her this, like, I don't even know you, who are you, you're not my daughter look. And, like,
yeah.
Oh, it's so sad.
Yeah. And, like, you know, luckily, all of, again, the named characters that we care about got out of this safely. Because that's the other thing of, like, when Clark first kind of agrees to just run away with Lexa, it's like, Octavia is still in the town, then, and, like, Kane is still there, but she's not, like, we have to save them. It's not until Abby is there that she's like, oh, wait.
Right? And it's like, Octavia, but Octavia is, you know, conveniently away with Blinken, telling him not to be a drug addict anymore.
Right, and then Indra and Kane get suspicious that they can't find Clark and Lexa, so then they go out to find them, and therefore don't die in the missile strike.
But, I mean, this could be spoilers, but I'm pretty sure, doesn't Kane get, like, trapped under a bunch of rubble, and they have to, like, get him out? Doesn't that happen?
Maybe.
Or does that happen during a different explosion?
There's a lot of situations in the show where Kane could be trapped under a bunch of rubble. I don't remember specifically.
All right, well, then maybe they did get out. Because I don't remember Indra being, like, in trouble either. But I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah. But yeah, that sucks. And, like, you know, how Clark told Bellamy, like, oh, no, Octavia's here. She's fine.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. And then Raymond lets it slip to him that Octavia's in trouble, which I thought he handled very well.
He really did. There was a moment where he was like, what? Like, you lied to me? Mm-hmm. And then Raven's just like, hey, look, there's nothing you can do about it.
Literally.
Like, you have an important job to do. And then he's just kind of like, okay, well, I guess I'll do that then.
Like, this might as well happen. Oh, good old Bellamy.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got for this. You want to talk about the books?
Yeah. I mean, no.
No. Do it.
Hit me with that summary.
Okay, here is my summary of the final chapters of the book. I don't remember what numbers they were. On the Ark, Luke proposes to Glass, who accepts. Shortly after, an oxygen shortage causes a lockdown in which the poorer stations will not receive sufficient air. Glass sneaks to Luke's station to potentially die with him, and we discover that while she was confined, she named Luke's roommate Carter as her child's father, for which he was executed. On the ground, a fire rages through the Hundreds camp. Wells holds Clark back from going in to save Thalia, who dies. Octavia is missing, and Clark accompanies Bellamy to search for her in the woods. Wells works on rebuilding the camp until they are visited by a hostile group of grounders and realize they are not alone on the surface of the earth.
Bum, bum, bum. So, this building is so bad. So the biggest reveal for me, the most interesting part of this whole section, was, like, the reveal that Wells, like, sped up the goddamn air leak so he could save Clark one goddamn person. I'm like, okay, so in this version of the story, Wells is a psychopath. Like, what the actual fuck? Like, either a psychopath or, like, a fucking idiot. Like, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically he overhears his father talking about how they do eventually plan to have an Earth mission where they'll send the, like, confined miners down to the Earth. But he wants to hold it off for a while. But Wells is like, well, it's gotta happen before Clark turns 18, because when she turns 18, they will just execute her. So then he's like, well, I will go hack a little hole in a damaged door so that we lose oxygen faster, which, yes, is an absolutely psychotic thing to do.
And, like, I don't know if we are supposed to dislike this about Wells or go, oh, how romantic. I really don't know.
I don't really know how I'm supposed to feel about any of these characters.
Because I hate everyone, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. I wouldn't say I hate Clark, but I don't like her very much.
No.
Yeah, and so, let's see. So we get a couple different, like, revelations about the past, right? So that was Wells' big revelation. We discover that, right, that Glass said that Carter was the father of her child.
So we at least have a reason for her being.
For her being sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
Which, first of all, I assumed that was Luke's brother, but apparently it was just, like, his roommate.
I for sure thought it was his brother, too.
Yeah, no, I tried to go back and, like, find the scene, and it's, like, it never explicitly says that he's Luke's brother, but I was just, like, they lived together, so I just assumed that they were,
and
like,
he has,
siblings.
Like, tattoos on his body of his birth and his death, like, that feels very brotherly to me. But,
exactly, like, yeah, but apparently it was just a random roommate, so... So, yeah, so I guess at least there was some, again, reason for some reference, again, to the sexual assault. It wasn't just completely ignored. But then on the arc, I guess as part of this oxygen shortage that Wells helped speed up, they're just like, yeah, again, it's sort of like the culling in the TV show where they were like, the original plan was just to turn off the air to a certain sector and just, like, say it was a malfunction. Whereas here it's just, like, so much more blatant of just, like, yeah, the upper class station, they will get the right amount of air. And everyone else, we're just gonna, like, not give you enough air until you all die. Like, what?
Yeah, it's just so clumsy. Everything about this plot, like, it didn't even have, like, a climax. Like, there was no...
Right, that's like there. So if we're thinking about sort of like this whole book, right? It's like there was not really a single plot line that started with this book and ended in this book, right? I guess you could maybe say like Glass and Luke got back together and like have sort of recommitted to their love for each other. That's arguably one plot line that has like started and ended.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's, yeah, like, it doesn't feel like, you know, obviously there's plenty of books that are, like, part of a series where it's like, oh, yeah, by the end of the book, there's still all of these loose ends, you know, because there is a series-wide arc that has to happen. So it's like you still have to have stuff to be picked up in the next book. But there should still be, like, this feeling of, like, there was a story in this single book that was then had some kind of resolution, and that just really doesn't exist.
Yeah, and it doesn't even feel like just like there's an incomplete story. It's not like an Infinity War Endgame thing where it's like you watch Infinity War and you're like, okay, this is half a movie. Like, yeah, it's not even half a book. It's just rambling and like just it just goes from like one sort of problem to another without like any sort of through line, and it's just it's not great.
Yeah. Okay, another past revelation we got, which I don't understand, was the death of Bellamy and Octavia's mother.
Which I guess is like, so the whole thing was she was getting scarier and scarier, right? Like, she obviously has some sort of mental illness. She is not in a good way. She tried to kill Octavia. And so Bellamy is, like, you know, very wary of his mother at this point, which is fair. But, like, he comes home, and we don't, like, I guess you're led to believe that she has tried to kill herself. Like, there's a knife, and she is bleeding. They don't even tell us where she's bleeding from. And, like, she's still alive at this point. And Bellamy, like, oh, no, like, I have to go find help. And then he, like, sees Octavia, like, peering out of the closet, and then he like takes her into their mother's bedroom and is just like, everything's gonna be okay now, and just like lets their mom bleed out on the floor.
And
I don't know how we're supposed to feel about that either. I don't know how we're supposed to feel about anything that happens in this book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I was so confused by that. And again, I can kind of maybe see where he was like gonna go get help, and then he realized like, if I go get help, they're probably going to find Octavia, right? Like, how can I safely hide Octavia if I bring, you know, like, doctors or security or something in here, like, because maybe they will search, you know, to find out some kind of reason as to why she, you know, apparently killed herself.
Mm-hmm.
So I can kind of see that. But it was just that I just could not understand, like, sort of the tone of that scene. Because, yeah, there is this feeling of, like, so she killed herself, which I guess, right, you could say, well, she was clearly mentally ill or just, like, very, very, you know, stressed out by the fact that she had this child she had to hide. But yeah, then, like, when she actually dies, there's this, like, almost feeling of, like, relief from Bellamy. Like, he's kind of like, we're going to be okay now. It's
right. And, like, are we supposed to be, like, sympathetic and be like, oh, good, like, I'm glad they're out of danger? Or are we supposed to be horrified that he let his own mother die? Like,
yeah.
And I don't know. It's just, yeah. Tone in this book is not very straightforward. And not in, like, a good, complicated way. Like, in a,
exactly.
This is just so confusing way.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And so then the book ends with the discovery that there are grounders. Basically, the grounders kind of attack the camp. They shoot down some poor red shirt who was talking to Wells. And again, it's just, like, they're... I mean, I think I'm also just, like, biased. Like, I'm just already, like, you know that this book isn't very well written. But it's, like, in the show, which at the end of the first episode, we kind of have that realization of, like, Jasper gets, you know, like, speared through the chest, and we're like, ooh, oh shit, there are people here. You know, that was just such this, like, huge shocking moment. Like, the you know, just the way that the show builds this, like, atmosphere and this tension and this, you know, twist, the surprise is so good. Whereas in the book, it was like, there was no kind of, like, atmospheric lead up. There was no, like, tension before it. It was just like, oh, this guy's talking to Wells. And then suddenly, what? There's an arrow in his neck and he falls to the ground. And, like, Wells looks up and there's a bunch of people with, like, you know, bows and arrows or whatever standing at the edge of the camp. And he's like, what? We're not alone down here. Like, you know, there was no, like, even though that, in theory, could be this huge reveal, this, like, really big, exciting twist. There was nothing that made me really invested in it.
Right. And it was further ruined by, like, Bellamy and Clark finding that orchard. And Bellamy's like, somebody planted it. And then that's when we understand, like, oh, there are people here. So then it's like when the bow and arrow shows up in the guy's neck, you're like, oh, those are those people. Like, it's just not.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. It's not well executed at all.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you so much for listening to A Bit Much.
We'd like to thank Bremimba and Meredith Stein for our lovely logo.
You can find us on the internet. Our Twitter is at A Bit Much Podcast. Our Gmail is abitmuchpodcast@gmail.com. And our blog is abitmuchpodcast.blogspot.com. Thank you again for listening. I'm Jenna.
I'm Megan.
And our quote for today comes from Lexa. The dead are gone, Clark. The living are hungry.